This is Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett. Smaller colleges and universities in Wisconsin are facing growing financial challenges, and some have closed down completely. Northland College in Ashland is currently trying to raise $12 million by April 3rd to keep its doors open. Last year, Cardinal Stritch University in Milwaukee closed down. A handful of the universities of Wisconsin two-year campuses have also closed or suspended in-person classes, most recently UW-Milwaukee at Waukesha and UW-Platteville at Richland. Declining enrollment is a big part of the problem. Higher education leaders around the state and country are looking for solutions to keep their classrooms open. We're taking a closer look at how colleges are navigating these issues and what options are available to try and solve them. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Did a campus in your community close recently, or is it in difficulty? What does it mean to have that campus where you live right now? Did you attend a smaller college, big or small, or sorry, public or private? What did you think? Do you want to see more done to keep them open? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@wpr.org. Doug Letterman is a co-founder and editor of the online publication Inside Higher Ed. Doug, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, we've got these examples here in Wisconsin. Are we alone in Wisconsin, or is this something going on elsewhere in the country?
Well, you're hardly alone. You are, I would say, the Midwest and the Northeast are probably the centers of this kind of activity for a variety of reasons. But we haven't done a full count, but there probably aren't very many states in the country that haven't seen at least one college close or merge. And I mean, when you think about it, there are 3,000 or 4,000 colleges in the country, and we have seen enrollment decline over the last decade by a million plus, from about 20, from close to 20 million down to 18 and a half or so. And, you know, the number of institutions is unlikely to stay constant when you see that kind of change. That's just one of the multiple factors that's happening. But you're hardly alone, but you're definitely in one of the zones where we're seeing more of this happen than elsewhere.
Each campus difficulty, I'm sure, has its unique elements, but do you see this overall trend, declining enrollment, being at the heart of most of these challenges?
I don't think there's any question that enrollment, changing demographics and changing behavior are a major factor. There are others. We have seen enrollment decline, as I said, probably going back about a decade. The peak was probably in the low, was it around 2010, when there were almost 21 million people enrolled in colleges and universities around the country. And since then, we've seen a decline. Then we saw it sort of a slow decline. And then we saw, obviously, a big shift during the pandemic. We saw about a million additional students kind of disappear and kind of fall off track. We've seen enrollment slowly recover since then. So, and that all was heading into what had been anticipated to be starting around the middle of this coming decade. We're expecting to see a further decline in the number of 18-year-olds. And this is basically what basically the baby boom echo, the people who in the mid-2000s and late 2000s, the recession, the big Great Recession of 2008, basically led to, as often happens, a decline in the number of children being born. And we're seeing the sort of echo of that happening now, where we're seeing over the next decade expecting a drop, different parts of the country, but a drop in the number of 18-year-olds. So all of this decline over the last decade and the pandemic stuff was leading into what was projected to be this sort of baby boom, you know, this sort of enrollment cliff, as people have called it. You layer on top of the enrollment issues a set of things, including a pretty significant, hard to measure, but pretty significant decline in people's confidence and in growing doubts about the value of getting a college degree, and changes in the behavior about how many people are willing to sort of take, whether it's 2 years at a community college or 4 years for a four-year degree, out of the workforce. So people are less inclined to go study full time. So all those factors are sort of swirling and contributing to this.
And Doug, I remember back after the Great Recession, you mentioned the year, I think 2010, as a peak for college enrollment, the idea that, hey, this recession, it tanked the economy, maybe there's no jobs out there. guess I might as well go to school for a couple of few years, get some qualifications when things turn around. Now we've got this post-COVID situation where unemployment is lower, many more jobs than applicants in some cases. Is it just that simple that a better economy is hurting colleges?
100%. I mean, that's the thing. Higher education, as you just laid out very well, is what's called countercyclical, meaning when the economy is strong and there are jobs, people go get those jobs. And there's a, you know, listen, there's a set of kids. My kids were probably going to go to college almost no matter what, grew up in a middle class background. There are a lot of people who live on sort of a work slash school bubble, and they're going to make their decisions. That's especially true of adult learners, less true of sort of 18-year-olds, but there are some 18-year-olds whose families need them to go work. And so when the economy is good and coming out of the recession, as you said, there were manufacturing jobs, but lots of jobs that were paying bonuses for people to come and take a $500 signing bonus. And instead of what was a $13 an hour job, we're paying $20 an hour. So when the economy is strong, people make that choice, that set of people, and there's a few million people in that category. When the economy is less strong, people are going to, as you said, go get some more training. So that's another factor that is absolutely contributing to this problem. And basically the situation, what that leaves is a lot of institutions that have – arguably, there are plenty of places around the country where lots of colleges were able to keep filling their classes. And now with the sort of pool shrinking, that's part of why we're seeing places close or merge. I'm glad. I mean, your introduction was really good at differentiating, even though you described them as sort of small. So you're not talking about the University of Wisconsin at Madison, and which is going to, all the flagships are doing great generally now. They're winning the battle to the extent, but there are different kinds of institutions. So the sort of regional, the technical colleges that you described, the branch campuses of the publics, those mostly serve adults. The Richlands that you were talking about, those are the places that are being affected most by the state of the economy and the fact that there are good jobs for people who need jobs and want jobs. The Cardinal Stritches of the world are more affected by the sort of declines in the number of 18-year-olds and people starting to ask hard questions about, you know, is this $40,000 tuition going to pay off for me? So different problems, different sort of sets of these things affecting different types of institutions, but there are very few institutions that are invulnerable to this, to the trends we're talking about here.
Talking to Doug Letterman from Inside Higher Ed about a lot of small campuses around Wisconsin, around the country, facing financial challenges, largely because of declining enrollment. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your experiences, your questions. That's 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller now. Josh is with us in Eau Claire. Josh, hello.
Hey, I work at UW-Eau Claire, and your caller or your interviewer mentioned that the flagships are doing okay. So UW-Madison doesn't really have enrollment issues. They just open up the spigot a little bit more and accept more because they have 5,000 to 7,000 extra applicants every year than they accept. There's a guaranteed transfer program from the comprehensive, so the UW-Eau Claire, Stouts, Platteville. If you start at 2 years at the comprehensive and you do well, you get a guaranteed transfer into Madison. And if Madison would help the comprehensives out by saying, instead of you're not accepted to Madison, you're accepted to Madison, but you're going to do your first 2 years at UW-Platteville. That would really help out the comprehensive and leverage us as a UW system rather than Madison on an island and all the comprehensives. You fight it out for whoever is left.
Josh, thanks. Thanks a lot for the call. Doug, Wisconsin's not the only state with that sort of flagship and other campus model. Texas and others have this. They don't always play together exactly like Josh wants them to.
Definitely not. And it's a great call and a phenomenon that we absolutely see around the country. And the tricky part, it is, you would like to think that people who run systems like what's now called the Universities of Wisconsin, they changed the name, would do that kind of sort of coordinating, it tends to be called, where you're saying, where you're making all the parts work well together. There are enormous differences in how much authority the different systems wield and how much they're willing to use it. Some of your listeners may be old enough to remember conversations probably about a decade ago about Madison sort of really flexing its muscles and really almost threatening to sort of leave the system. And that happened in some ways out in Oregon and in other places. So it is really trickier than you'd like to think it should be to get the institutions playing together. But that's the kind of logic that would absolutely make sense. And the students who are not getting accepted to Madison, I don't know enough about what's happening on the ground there, but it would be really smart for the system to say, you know, we're going to give you guaranteed admission rather than seeing those people rejected at Madison go to Indiana University or to pick your or to the University of Minnesota or whatever. And so I think there's an opportunity for a lot of states to sort of be a little more aggressive to keep their regional campuses. Those comprehensive institutions that the caller from Eau Claire described are definitely vulnerable. They, along with a lot of the small privates, are struggling. And those are the institutions that probably those comprehensive institutions do the really heavy lifting in our post-secondary education ecosystem.
Thanks for that call. We're talking Inside Higher Ed co-founder and editor Doug Letterman about declining enrollment and financial challenges facing smaller colleges and universities in Wisconsin and beyond. You could join in at 800-642-1234. Do you attend or did you attend a smaller school, public or private? Do you want to see it stick around for a long time? What challenges do you see there? If you work on one of these campuses, love to hear from you at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up our talk with Doug Letterman, co-founder and editor at Inside Higher Ed, looking at smaller colleges in Wisconsin, why some of them are closing or at risk, and some possible solutions. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Doug, before we go back to our callers, I want to look at solutions. Have you seen examples of smaller colleges and universities finding ways to be sustainable with a smaller student count?
Yeah, I mean, this is what there's probably, I said before, there are three or 4,000 colleges in the country, depending on how you count. I would say there's probably, maybe there's 10% that don't have to worry about these issues at all. So that's, you know, 200-300 institutions probably. And everybody else is going to need in one way or another to change how they operate to continue to fulfill their mission, but in an era when people are looking for somewhat different things and when potentially there are fewer students. But remember, one of the reasons, I mean, I talked before about the decline in the number of 18-year-olds. There are tens of millions of people in our society who have either tried college and it didn't quite work out for them the first time for all sorts of reasons. There are plenty of people who've never gone to college at all. There's about 35 to 40 million people who have what we call some college, no degree. And so one of the things that institutions are doing, and not just the community colleges and the regional publics that have had a history of serving adult learners, but even you see some small private colleges doing this, expanding who they consider to be their students. And so that's one change that we have seen is places saying, you know, we used to be a residential campus that served just 18-year-olds. We're going to have to add programs. We're going to have to add certificates. We're going to have to. So some of the changes involve changing the offerings, going into sort of not necessarily abandoning the four-year degree, but recognizing that fewer people probably are going to be looking for that full-time residential experience and are going to be wanting to do it alongside work. I mean, we know that already a significant proportion of students have to work to get through college. So some of the changes are around what the offerings are. Some of them are in how they offer it. And part of the problem that when you have fewer students, your cost structure doesn't necessarily shrink with it. And so one of the things we've been seeing, we've seen lots of colleges go through and looking at their academic programs and deciding whether all of them are still viable, whether some of them are less effective and less efficient than they might be. We're seeing institutions collaborate with each other. There are course sharing platforms where a bunch of colleges will come together and around like languages, and not everybody will teach Chinese. There will be a group of institutions where some of them will teach Chinese courses and the others will teach German and some others will teach, and they'll share the offering. So there's a lot of experimentation. There's this tendency to look at higher education as being static and unchanging. And there are certain things that are consistent, but I do think that it's kind of a myth that colleges don't change. Now, whether enough of them are going to adapt fast enough to stay alive and avoid the fates of the Cardinal Stritches and the Concordia, Wisconsin, another one that closed last year, is hard to say. But and obviously, we've seen a ton of experimentation with different ways of delivery, including online education. So there is a lot of experimentation, but these are institutions where roughly 75% of the costs are in people, one way or another, and it's going to be very hard for them to shrink without laying off people. I mean, your intro also talked about sort of the importance role of these institutions in the community and in their communities. A lot of the institutions, a lot of colleges are the biggest employers in their town or in their county. And so there's a tendency to want to keep them alive. And I think closing a college is hard and painful, but I think there will be a decent number that close.
I believe we still have some Concordia University in Wisconsin. There were some campus closures, though, along the way.
Right,
we still have our Mequon campus, at least. I know that because we've got a guest from there pretty often. Okay, back to our callers. Juliet is with us in Washburn. Juliet, hi.
Hi. I was just calling. I know we're running short on time, but I just wanted to say I was a non-traditional student at one of our two-year regional campuses, and I was because I was place-bound, and so I was able to obtain a phenomenal education there. And now I live in the community that's going to be affected tremendously by Northland's closure. I think that we should speak to not only your guest touched on how deep the economic component is of these universities in small communities, especially in northern Wisconsin, but I think there's a greater conversation to be had around the overall rhetoric in society over the last 20 years devaluing education and higher education primarily, and maybe we need higher education to be more assertive at what the value is. Obviously, the value has increased as funding has decreased from at the governmental level or federal level, but if your guest could speak to any of these components, that would be great. I'll keep my comments off here.
Juliet, thanks for the call. Doug?
Yeah, she made some very good points. There is no question, especially in the last 5 years, although you can go back longer to people like Scott Walker, who in your fair state, who definitely targeted higher education in certain ways as a sort of because it appealed to what he viewed as some of the constituents he wanted. That's happened a lot when we've seen people run for higher offices, but there is no question we've seen public confidence in higher education decline. We've seen rhetoric criticizing higher education increase. And listen, some of the criticisms are fair. I mean, higher education is decreasingly affordable. We've seen there are some fair things that I think people want to see higher education respond to. There's absolutely also some really unfair critiques, and I think just wrong-headed critiques that are just part of our the politicization, increased politicization and partisanship in our society. But I think there's a lot of room for colleges and frankly for business leaders to step up and support the higher education institutions and the importance of higher education. When college leaders go and talk about how important their institutions are, they're seen as just another interest group in some ways. And so actually, I think the people who really need to be standing up and explaining the importance of higher education are the employers who are going to be hiring the graduates, who are moving into their businesses into communities where they want an educated community, so they should have good colleges and universities near there. I think we've seen a degradation in support for higher education, and I think there are a bunch of people who could step up and speak more on their behalf.
Thanks a lot for that call. We have just over a minute or so left, Doug. In our last minute or so, are there any demographic signs of good news for colleges and universities, or do they really have to adapt to this different present and future?
Well, I think, listen, as I said, I think probably the biggest, there is not in the near term a lot of good news on the demographic front if you're talking mostly about traditional age students. I mean, again, this demographic, there's a wonderful economist named Nathan Graw up at Carleton College in your neighboring state who has focused on sort of what the demographics look like. The big opportunity is in what I would describe as kind of, we still call them non-traditional learners, even though in many ways they're the majority now, but of adult learners and veterans. And there are just tons of people who would benefit from having a higher education of some kind. And again, it may not be a degree. It may be that it's a certificate that gives them something to grab onto and that will help them get a job. So I think there's a lot of opportunity but I think it will require, the more traditional an institution is, it will require some adaptation. There are very few places I think that can afford to just keep doing what they're doing and continue to thrive. But I think there's plenty of opportunity to go out and reshape what a college offers and what services it provides students to keep functioning.
Doug, we'll leave it there. Thanks for joining us.
Pleasure. Great to have. Thanks for having me.
That's Doug Lederman, co-founder and editor at Inside Higher Ed, with us today to look at the ways smaller colleges and universities are working to overcome declining enrollment and other financial issues.